Rearing up on the near horizon, Christoph Waltz attempts to make order out of chaos in Terry Gilliam's ramshackle sci-fi oddity, The Zero Theorem. Kristen Bell's perky private eye beats a path back to her hometown in the noirish Veronica Mars, and Breaking Bad's Aaron Paul puts his pedal to the metal in the video game adaptation Need for Speed, which, unaccountably, is 130 minutes long. And by way of compensation, we'll also be announcing the winner of the Guardian's 1 minute short film competition. First up though, it's Under the Skin, Jonathan Glazer's extraordinary refashioned adaptation of the Michel Faber novel about an alien succubus at large in Scotland. Scarlett Johansson plays vampire E.T. in Jonathan Glazer's bewitching, immersive ice bath of a movie, drifting between the high streets and the shingle of modern-day Scotland. Under the Skin gives us the alien view of a world that seems alien, an exotic, otherworldly portrait of the place we call home. Here to provide a little human comfort is Peter Bradshaw and Andrew Pulver. Peter, I saw this when it played at Venice, and at least a third of the audience booed it very lustily. So it's clearly a film that kind of polarises people.
Yes, I'm very surprised to hear that. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I suspect that lots of the international audiences aren't picking up on Jonathan Glazer's sort of dog whistles and bat squeaks of comedy and humour and bizarre spectacle in this film. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think it's his masterpiece so far. I thought it was just visually stunning. I thought it was dramatically audacious and interesting. I thought all the hidden camera stuff he was doing, presumably completely genuine, and it certainly looked genuine, scenes of shopping malls and streets in Glasgow
and people texting.
He just has real shots of real people in the real Glasgow streets, and Scarlett Johansson as the alien figuring out which one of them she wants to eat.
Yeah. And it's the banality of modern life that becomes something otherworldly.
It becomes alien. You suddenly realize they look like an alien. Scarlett Johansson's alien looks like the normal person. Oh. And the alienation effect, the distancing effect, is brilliantly done. And just that, I can only describe it as like an art house installation effect of helicoptering Scarlett Johansson into the tough streets of Glasgow is a brilliantly funny idea. Mm. And it's funny. And I think it's intentionally funny. It is supposed to be funny. It wouldn't have been as funny with an unknown actor. Yeah. And I think it wouldn't have been as funny with anybody else, because Scarlett Johansson is an alien. I mean, an A-lister from a private jet is the nearest thing to an alien from a flying saucer. I mean, she really does look like an alien. And the expression on Scarlett Johansson's face when she looks at them, I think is quite genuine. She really doesn't know what to make of these people. She is an alien. So for so many reasons, it's audacious, it's utterly distinctive and original. It's formally commanding and brilliant and stunning, and it makes you hold your breath. It really is excellent, I thought.
Andrew, would you have been one of the booers?
Absolutely not. I'm just completely unanimous with you two. I know you really loved it as well at Venice. It's just a great, great film. And Glazer, who I understood has taken a long time to sort of manage to finish this, he's really got to be congratulated. I mean, it sort of does everything Peter says, and it's sort of managed to be both incredibly simple and incredibly complex at the same time. Be really, there's amazing scenes of sort of Scarlett Johansson and this sort of Scottish guy she runs into watching Tommy Cooper on the TV and stuff like that. And at the same time, these kind of bizarre future world abstract landscapes where the alien Johansson sort of consumes people, look like one of those sort of mad music videos that Glazer made back in the day. So he's just managed to put everything together into this. It's just sort of works absolutely brilliantly. And there's one or two scenes that I found unwatchably upsetting, which are very, very simple, and I don't want to give them away really. And at the same time, what happens is sort of what you would kind of expect from any sort of zombie alien wandering the world, picking off mentally ill as well.
It's totally playing with those genre tropes, isn't it?
So it's both generic and completely distinctive.
Scarlett Johansson watching us, watching her in the brilliant Under the Skin. And after all that wild exoticism, you may well feel the need for something big and crude and dumb. You may well feel the need for speed.
I spent 2 years thinking about one moment. He set me up. In our world, you always go back.
Aaron Poole is fresh out of jail with the cops on his tail. He's driving a Ford Mustang to the West Coast to compete in a race. And here ends our crash course in Need for Speed.
But first, we're going to need a fast car.
So, Peter, I can only assume that Under the Skin was your film of the week until this one rolled
this
on.
One. I don't know. Sometimes reviewers begin by very sorrowingly saying, oh, I wish I liked it more. Now I'm going to begin by saying, oh, I wish I liked it less. I wish I wasn't quite so embarrassed by how much I quite enjoyed it. I did quite enjoy it. It is very dumb. It's very crass. It's kind of stupid. It doesn't make any sense, really. And it is too long. At 2 hours and 10 minutes, it really
it's a
doesn't.
Lot of revving.
It needs a lot more speed, to be honest with you. But it is quite fun in a way. I'm kind of baffled by the very sorrowing kind of brow furrowing reviews it's been getting. People saying, "Oh, Aaron Paul completely miscast." I think, you know, he's just a guy playing a driver of a car. You know, the car's the star, and they do lots of stupid stunts, which are. Well, they're not really two-lane blacktop. It's not really drag racing, and it's not really bullets. It refers slightly audaciously, it refers to Bullet and Steve McQueen, actually, in the film. It's more like those sort of goofy Smokey and the Bandit movies, which are chase scenes right. and cop cars flying through the air. It rather kind of goofily tries to mash up the idea of a race, a drag race, a conventional race, with the idea of being chased by a cop car because you've done something illegal, and right. tries to mags up the two. So the people are racing and the cop cars sort of join the race because they want to break up the party. And it's kind of daft. It's completely daft. It's completely silly. But I did think, on a purely technical level, it was quite well made. It's stupid. I can't really hold my head up in polite company anymore. But there it is. I did quite enjoy it.
Oh, wait. See, they're trying to trap us. You're just stripped onto the shoulder.
No, I'm going for the Hummer. He's a pavement prowler.
Pavement what?
It's a show car with a big lift kit. Makes up for his inferiority complex.
Hey, are you crazy? Whoa! Jesus!
That's Aaron Paul out scampering the legacy of Breaking Bad in Need for Speed. Next up, it's Veronica Mars, a fan-funded spin-off from the late lamented TV show. Kristen Bell is the high school private eye who's now all grown up and living in the city. But it seems she can't escape her past.
I need your help, Veronica.
I'm gonna need your help.
A teenaged private eye. Trust me, I know how dumb that sounds. But it's not like I found a decoder ring at the bottom of a cereal box and thought, that sounds like fun. I wish. That would have been adorable. Nope. My best friend was murdered when I was 15. Trying to figure out who did it was how I coped.
Veronica Mars was a small-screen teenage detective who plied her trade between 2004 and 2007. Now she's back, fattened up for the big screen by her faithful devotees, and back in town to solve a crime.
After my dad was run out of office, he got his PI license and opened an agency. I hung out there to learn the tricks of the trade.
Andrew, there's clearly a groundswell of love for the old Veronica Mars TV show. Is this their just desserts?
I think it will be. I mean, famously, the film raised $2 million in a single day on Kickstarter, which shows that it really has got some people out there prepared to put their hands in their pocket because they love it.
Maybe it's just one millionaire.
And the film itself really does feel like a very solid hour and a half, 2 hours of a very long, very well put together TV show. It doesn't go anywhere cinematically. You know, we aren't suddenly in sort of from Twin Peaks land or something like that. It feels very much like high grade TV extended with a very sort of long, twisty, complicated plot. I actually found it very entertaining and well put together. It sort of works. I mean, if you're not familiar with the show, the character is back in the TV show, she was a sort of high school private eye. She's now older, training to be a lawyer, but a sort of horrible, complicated crime back in her hometown of Neptune brings her back, and she has to solve this with... And there's quite a lot of concession to modern internet culture where there's, you know, involves spyware and... But then quite a lot of also that whole sort of looking at old photographs and seeing something in the background saying, oh, no, that happened, that's something wrong 20 years ago and I'm just seeing it and that sort of thing. But it works well and...
Does it work for people who don't have any idea about the TV show?
Yeah, absolutely. They have a sort of complicated prologue sort of explaining who everybody is. And then every now and then somebody will pop up who is obviously a much-loved character. And if you kind of don't know who they are, they kind of explain who they are fairly quickly. The clear influence on the show is Buffy, the Vampire Slayer. It is that kind of thing where a perky, sassy person who looks like a cheerleader but sort of claims to be a bit of an outsider is at the centre of this sort of... alarming narrative, small town narrative, and kind of gets to grips with it, and it works.
9 years of radio silence, and yet I still kind of knew I could count on you.
We are going to the reunion.
I'm shocked you even came to this. I knew you'd be here. You've been sitting there since graduation, haven't you?
Veronica Mars.
Look who it is. Most likely to blog and class buzzkill.
You are just who I was looking for. Most likely to know where I can find the bar. Gross.
Kristen Bell as super sleuth Veronica Mars. Last up on the menu is The Zero Theorem, a dystopian sci-fi thriller from Terry Gilliam, the crazy uncle of British cinema. And the good news for his fans is he doesn't seem to be mellowing.
Surprise. Bane. I waited. You never called.
Oh, you. Poor Kane.
Chubby's right. You need me.
Terry Gilliam has seen the future, and it's a rickety junk shop of bells and whistles, guttering candles and antique telephones. Christoph Waltz stars as the harassed egghead, driven to distraction by co-stars Tilda Swinton, Matt Damon and Melanie Thierry.
We prefer not to be touched.
The rent must be outrageous.
Actually, we own the building. We bought it from an insurance company. Some years ago, there'd been extensive fire damage. The previous occupants were an order of monastic monks who've sworn vows of chastity.
Poverty and silence. Apparently, no one broke the silence to yell fire.
Peter, it's always nice to see Terry Gilliam back, but is it nice to see him back with this?
I have to say, I couldn't get on with this film. I kind of tuned out. I really, to refer to the phrase I was alluding to a few moments ago, I wanted to like it. I really did, because I think it's great that Terry Gilliam, his films don't look like anybody else's films. It's great to have somebody who's so authorially different. And yet there is the disconcerting sense that his films all are starting to look like each other as well. So there's that. I thought there were some lovely ideas kind of pinballing around. There were some nice moments, some nice gags, but I found it so frantically over-detailed and over-managed and overcooked. I just couldn't get on with
it. It just festoons everything with just, kind of lights and phones.
Everything. It was about 720% of what we needed, except for the sudden moments when we went to that weird virtual reality paradise beach, where suddenly everything calmed down. Yeah. There were no details other than this really interesting-looking virtual reality beach, and it was great. Just thought, wow, that's great. What an interesting idea. Suddenly, it really was surreal. And then we're back to the wacky kind of wall of Zane that rather, in the end, leaves me cold. Christoph Waltz, sort of interesting to have him in the role. I got the impression that he was just, you know, doing his professional best with this role. It wasn't particularly for him, I didn't think. I think the film wasn't really saying anything that Gilliam hasn't said before in Brazil, really. Yeah. Brazil kind of did that. and did it, I think, slightly better, really. And I felt
needed a bigger budget as well. It's just kind of like one street in this future world London.
Yes, he was obviously using the same location, this very interesting kind of marble staircase location. He was using it for lots of different buildings. Yeah. And you thought, oh, hang on, this is the same location you're reusing. But that wasn't my problem with it. My problem wasn't that he didn't have enough budget. My problem was that you can scale it down now. You can dial it down to your budget and it would make it better. He was trying to go wackily, crazily over the top with, as if he had $20 million or $100 million. And that's not my problem with it. My problem isn't with his imagination, which is great, and it's not with his sense of humour, which is great. It's just that over-determining that I'm afraid leaves me a bit cold. But he had some fascinating things. I mean, my goodness, the names he had turning out. It's just, I think, rather funny, quick turn from Tilda Swinton, as they said. It was interesting.
The rapping? How was the rapping?
Well, it was interesting. It was bizarre. I didn't have a problem with it, really. The individual kind of components of it weren't at all bad.
Andrew, did its eccentricities win you over?
I have to say, as much like Peter, in fact, even more so than Peter, as much as I liked Terry Gilliam and loved many of his films in the past, I actually really didn't like this one at all. I thought it was sort of both intellectually and physically threadbare. It was like a student, 22-year-old, who read a couple of conspiracy theory books and then sort of churned out a sci-fi parable about what's all linking us together and the search for something, kind of like Pi, the Darren Aronofsky film, but not nearly with the same sort of sense of this might actually happen, which is what Pi seemed to have a sort of element of realism. This was, for, you know, a Gilliam sci-fi fable. And as Peter said, it's so crammed with ideas that it needed five times the money, I suspect, to pull it off. I mean, he hasn't made a film again since The Imaginarium and Dr. Parnassus, which actually was much better realised, I think, because it was obviously conceived on a bigger scale. And this, for me, the sort of restrictions on locations and design budget really showed. And again, there's nothing wrong with having a low budget. It's just whether you can successfully realise what you're aiming at with it. And I think this just didn't do it. And I found it really, really boring, basically. Despite all the talent he has on the show, because he's, you know, he can call in those favours because he's
certainly a lot of talent.
He's a man of great ideas, you know. But
I mean, one person who's on the show quite a lot is Melanie Thierry. It's a little bit Loaded magazine, isn't it? Her kind of cavorting around as the sexy spy.
As the sexy spy who's sort of in love with the older man. And it always makes me very uneasy when a creative older guy makes a movie about a misunderstood creative older guy. She's got this...
Who everyone wants to sleep with.
Everyone wants to sleep with. And he has this devastatingly sexy young woman who kind of is sort of a bit in love with him. But he, in a rather gallant way, doesn't necessarily want to go to bed with her.
He just wants her to prance around in her knickers.
He certainly wants her to do that quite a lot. I thought it was a bit uncomfortable. Well, not uncomfortable, but slightly kind of lacking in effectiveness, shall we say, lacking in plausibility.
And Matt Damon as well. I mean, only Terry Gilliam could presumably cast Matt Damon in a film and then try to hide him. He wears these sort of amazing camouflage suits.
Yeah. That was a good thing. Again, a funny idea. It didn't need budget. It didn't need kind of wacky William Gibson Kafkaesque ideas. It was just a simple, funny, kind of Python-esque idea. Again, great. I could watch it, that sort of thing, I could watch all day.
What happened to you, man?
Life happens to everybody, all right?
The only reason you're not laughing is because you're the punchline.
You have made a very big mistake.
We don't believe you.
Why would you want to prove that all is for nothing?
Close your eyes, and now picture it in your mind.
Terry Gilliam's Clattering Wayward, The Zero Theorem. And that's almost it from us. My thanks, as ever, to Peter Bradshaw and Andrew Pulver. But we're going to play out with the winner of the Guardian's Short Film Competition. Back in November, we invited readers to submit a one-minute movie on the theme of superheroes. And the envelopes have been opened, and the winner is Force by Void Matter. And I think that makes this the premiere. Hope you enjoy it. See you soon.